Everybody, this is Sandy Toes bringing you the Chronicle with my co-host Chris, and we're going to have Jeremy Torman joining us soon, and the music I'm going to play is actually Jeremy Torman. Jeremy Torman is an amazing artist and performer, and I found his music, and so we're going to listen to a couple of minutes of music while the rest of our friends join us, and then we will go to our shill hour. And I also want to welcome John. Hi, John. I'm so glad you're here with us. I'm going to introduce you. John is the new team member of the Chronicles. We're going to expand and try to reach out to the Spanish-speaking community to let them know about the glory of OmniFlix and the Cosmos ecosystem. John's already a veteran in the Cosmos ecosystem. He's already helped other artists, and he's the perfect person to assist us because he's not really doing his own collection and art. So he's not distracted by his personal artistic goals, which is fabulous. So welcome, John. How are you? Just why don't you say hello to us? Hi, how's it going, John?
Yeah. Hi, Sandy. I'm so glad to be here. And yeah, of course, I will do my best, you know, as we already talked. Well, I already know some of the people here, but to all the people that doesn't know me, I'm young and well. I have been on the Cosmos ecosystem for about 3 years, and so glad to be here.
Thanks, John. Chris, it's nice to see you today. You can officially, I think you already know John, because he's been in the OmniFlix spaces for the past couple of years, just like you and I. So how you doing, Chris? Let me just say hello to you. We've got some friends here. And give us an update on what you're going to be sharing with us today after we speak with our guest, Jeremy.
Hey, good morning, Cindy. Good morning, everyone. John, very nice to meet you. I know I've seen your icon before, but I don't know if we've ever formally met or spoke before. So very nice to have you here today. And today we will be covering just a base layer for our artists who may not know about staking, because like Sandy pointed out before, many times they earn these tokens in crypto and if selling their NFTs, but they don't necessarily know what they need to do for DeFi or how to trade it. Many times they just trade back to their dollar or their local currency. So we want to give them a good first step, and that's staking to the network or learning how to do staking in another protocol. So we'll be covering on that a little bit, Cindy.
Thank you so much, Chris. I appreciate that. And we've got a lot of fun things we're going to do. A lot has happened. And maybe you can also tell us a little bit about this Bitcoin halving. And, you know, that's fun crypto talk, and that's really exciting. What is your opinion on that?
Yeah, so every 4 years, the Bitcoin, the initial supply that is set to be distributed to the miners, that distribution rate cuts in half every 4 years. When I first got into crypto, Sandy, I think I first heard of Bitcoin in 2010, but I didn't actually purchase my first crypto, my first Bitcoin, until 2012. And that was after the first halving, because we saw these different price spikes. And that kind of is what kind of got me interested in Bitcoin. Was I wondered, whenever you had if the demand goes up and you have a supply crunch every 4 years, even though it's built into the code, I was curious how that would affect the pricing. So that's kind of what got me interested. And, you know, for people that have been around for a while, you've seen these halving cycles, and you can kind of see how the crypto bull bear boom bust cycle plays off of that. So, you know, we had another halving in 2016, another halving in 2020, and almost every single time you can go look back and see that 6 month to 1 year and a half period leading into and post halving are these huge signs of bullishness. So basically that's what it is. There's a number of 21 million Bitcoin. When that first started, every 10 minute block would give you 50 Bitcoins as a reward. That first halving cycle cut to 25 after 4 years. Then 4 years later, it went to 12.25, then 12.5, then 6.25. So basically, if you just keep dividing by two, you see the supply crunch. So there's a lot of confusion when people come in and they're new. They don't necessarily understand the halving. I've heard many people explain it, and they think that it's kind of like a stock dividend being cut and multiple stocks being created and that kind of stuff. So it can be confusing for new people, but it's tons of resources and information all over the internet, all over YouTube. Just look up Bitcoin halving and you're bound to find all the details you want.
Thank you, Chris. That is very important, pertinent information, because we're also trying to bring literacy about cryptocurrency, and we're not just art focused, although art is the biggest part of what I spend my time focusing on, making art, finding art, helping my curators find your art. And also a shout out to some of our listeners. Abhorro Deep has recently joined OmniFlix. It's got beautiful art. And we also showcased his art in New York City. So I just also wanted to give a little update about what we did in New York City. It was kind of a big deal. So I went to New York City NFT. Not only was my artwork shown there, but OmniFlix put on a brunch. So we had an off-site brunch that we invited people to just come celebrate, you know, cryptocurrency, NFTs, artwork, and also just to, you know, I thought it was great because, you know, OmniFlix is a major player. They have events, they're a multimedia platform, and it was the first time that I officially presented for the blockchain in that capacity, even though I, you know, I went to Cosmoverse, that's where I met John. So that was a really big deal. And there was a lot of things that was like working against us. Namely, there was a big earthquake. I was making a video of the place. So that was kind of interesting. Earthquakes are not common in New York, and they're quite scary because they've got these tall buildings made of bricks. At the time, the significance of it didn't really like click on me because I'm from California, and you know, first of all, people don't know that we have earthquakes on a daily basis, but they're little earthquakes, and then every once in a while we have a big one that you know, causes some kind of damage. But our houses are mostly, you know, made up of sticks and paper and not the big bricks and the cement and the material they use in other parts of the world where they don't expect earthquakes. So with these changing weather patterns and, you know, it seems like everywhere there's like unheard of weather pattern that they haven't had. So where I live up in the Sequoia National Forest, my house up there, there are people who are over 80 years old. And two seasons ago, we had the worst rain in the spring. Trees fell on my house. We didn't have water or electricity for a month. FEMA declared it a natural disaster. And then, you know, I went to New York and they have this earthquake. So I think this all, you know, why am I talking about this? Because I think these are things we don't really think about, but they make a huge difference in our economy. They make a difference in how we live and how we move and how, you know, how it affects us. So it is kind of unusual that we're having these weather patterns and these kind of unusual things. So I guess our guest, Jeremy, may have issues connecting with us today because he hasn't come, but that's okay. We've got, he's asking me, is it when? And it's now. So he should be joining us soon. I just sent him a message. So this Pacific Standard Time, Eastern Time, University Time, sometimes it gets confusing. And sometimes I find that I have not slept for 24 hours. If I don't get to bed by 11 o'clock, I start talking to friends in India with conflict. I am losing connection. You guys have me? Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, we hear you now. You just cut out for 1 second, Sandy, but you're back.
Okay, great. I am back. Wonderful. Well, we should be having Jeremy join us soon. I told him this is now, and hopefully he will. And you know what? Let me just send him the link. That's probably a good thing to do. You know, copy the link and send it. Sometimes I don't multitask very well. Let me shoot. Okay. Excuse me for a moment while I find Jeremy's DM. Because I have to, okay, I did that. I sent it. He should be joining us. And by the way, we also will be collecting a lot of artwork. We'll be collecting artwork on Stargaze. We'll be collecting artwork on Object and Tezos. We'll be collecting artwork on Omniflix, on Ethereum. And at the end of the month, we'll make lovely curation videos for you. And in the middle of all that, we'll also have certain curation themes. For example, Karina, we had a curation theme for honeymoon. And so that was really fun. We collected artwork that had that theme and she curated it. It was really amazing to just have that kind of engagement and also to actually collect the artwork, which is really the most important thing. And down the line, we'll be showcasing your artwork at these exhibits, depending on where we go. So I am looking forward to the real world curation of showing your artwork around the world. That is one of the wonderful things that we're going to be working on. And so while we wait for Jeremy to join us, Chris, why don't we just, you know, go to the second part of the show and then we'll talk to Jeremy when he comes. And why don't we tell our friends about the DeFi part of when you sell your NFTs. So for those of us who are on Omniflix, and some of you, you know, you don't have to go through the crypto part because we're sending you the Flix and you're starting out. But and then what happens when you sell your NFTs and you've accumulated some Flix, or maybe you listed it in Atom or Osmosis? You know, there's several other tokens you can list your artwork. How do you then, first of all, pull your tokens out, exchange them so they can become fiat where you live, or maybe you want to take a percentage of that and take advantage of the DeFi programs and the staking rewards that are available to you. So Chris, would you please explain to us the process of, you know, what is the best way? And we're going to make a video of this for you. But so why don't you tell us what to do with your tokens when you're on Omniflix or Stargaze or any other platform, that an NFT platform in the Cosmos ecosystem? What do we do with our coins? Please, over to you.
Yeah, so today we're going to talk a little bit about staking. And let me preface this with some exciting news too, Sandy. I don't know if you saw the tweets, but we just saw DAODAO and Sisla and Omniflix.
Chris, is anybody hearing Chris? Am I being rugged?
Can you hear me now, Sandy? So I'm getting a thumbs up from John. It may be Sandy can't
yes.
hear me.
Yes, yes. I can hear you.
Okay. Can you tell Sandy that you can hear me?
Okay. I'm sorry, Chris. I'm going to use my computer and turn it on. I'm rugged and I can't hear you speak. So actually, why don't you jump down and then come back up and I'll make you co-host. That way I don't have to mess around with my computer and I can hear you. Twitter gets weird. Thank you, John. I'm glad you told me that Chris was speaking. So while we're having a little bit of technical difficulty, I want to thank you all for joining us. My co-host is Chris. He's going to be speaking to us about what to do with your tokens after you sell your artwork in the Cosmos ecosystem. And then we're going to invite our artist friend, Jeremy, to share with us his artwork and journey. Thanks for coming back up, Chris. Go ahead.
Awesome. Can you hear me now, Sandy?
I got you loud and clear.
Good. Yeah, if we have any more problems with this, Sandy, and you can't hear me, I'm just going to drop down and come back up. That way you won't have to change anything on your end. We should be good. So we'll go ahead and get started. Thank you, everyone, for being here. Sandy, I'm not sure if you saw the news. So before we even jump into staking, let's just make sure that everyone's aware that DAODAO and Sisla and Omniflix had their tweets come out the last few days And we're finally going to get the first iterations of DAOs fairly soon. They have the Commonwealth thread where you kind of discuss the props that you vote on to enable DAO. So for everyone that is going to be listening today and we're going to discuss staking, just know that we have some exciting things on the way. We've been waiting patiently. Even myself for Fight Farm, I've been waiting for DAOs. Sandy and these guys have been hearing me talk about DAOs for probably a year now. They're probably tired of hearing me talk about it. But one of the biggest things about Crypto Canvas Chronicles is not only can you learn how to do this on your own, like we're going to talk about right now with staking on your own, but we're going to show you how we can actually do this together as a group. Because the one cool thing about DAOs is we'll be able to take these tokens and stake them and vote on how we utilize these tokens as a group, whether it's staking to the network or doing something with DeFi. We can do things with NFTs as a group. So it's going to be a very, very exciting upcoming time. I hope that you guys are a little bit more patient. We're going to get there. They should have these props go up soon. The NFT staking is going to take a little while to get going. However, as far as staking a coin to a DAO or an invite-only DAO like a multi-sig, those are things we're going to teach you about. And if you don't know what these terms are, don't be overwhelmed. I promise we'll roll this out. We'll probably have some videos. We'll probably even have these videos translated. I know some people have connectivity issues depending on where you are in the world. So we have a lot of exciting news. For now, though, let's go ahead and talk about one basic thing that you can do. Like Sandy said, you can take your money and you can trade it to other coins like Bitcoin or Tezos or Atom or whatever, USDC, any type of stable coin you want. And, you know, that's fine. But the cool thing about crypto is you can actually put your money to work for you and earn passive income. Now, the first thing I will say is none of this is financial advice. We're just teaching you about what's available and how to do these things. What you do with your money is your own decision. Realize that everything you do in crypto or everything you do with money in general, just like in the real world in crypto, there are risks. There are things you need to know and understand. There are markets and the timing of the market, the bull market, the bear market. Don't think that just because we teach you something that we're trying to tell you this is exactly what you should do. What we're trying to do is give you information and that helps you make better decisions. Now, the reason I bring that up is when we say staking, effectively what you're doing is you are locking your funds up and in exchange, you're earning some sort of reward or interest rate. You'll see this called APR and APY. So your APR is like your direct interest rate and your APY is your interest rate that if you take it and you compound that, say you're earning an interest rate of 6% and you have $100 in there, and every month you earn 6% on that $100, you could take that profit, you could reinvest it, and you can compound your rewards. So that's why sometimes you see an APR is like 6% and an APY might be 15%. Because what it's telling you is that if you take that 6% that you're earning and you compound it and take your profit that you earn every day or week or month and you roll it back in, you're increasing the amount that you have staked, which increases that 6% interest rate that you earn. So the first thing I want to make clear is when you hear the word staking, it can mean multiple different things. When we talk about staking today, I'm going to make this clear is that we are talking about staking your coins to the network. Anytime you use a network like OmniFlix or Tezos or Atom, these are proof of stake networks. Proof of stake is different because in Bitcoin, you have proof of work blockchains. Proof of work blockchains, they utilize miners to process transactions. And they utilize different equipment that is very specific only for mining Bitcoin and processing Bitcoin and protecting the Bitcoin network. It requires a lot of electricity. So to attack the Bitcoin network is very, very, very expensive because you have to have specialized equipment that has cost to it. You have to run it in warehouses that have a large amount of electricity go into them. You have to be able to have maintenance and people to maintain that equipment. You have to pay for your internet cost. You have to pay for heating, or I'm sorry, cooling to deal with the heat of all those machines running. So when people say that Bitcoin is minted out of thin air and there's no value, you know that it simply cannot be true, because just the cost that it takes associated to create Bitcoins for the network to run and to keep that network secure, so that you're able to send money permissionlessly with no permission anywhere in the world instantly, that takes a lot of money. It takes a lot of time and effort from the miners. So that's how proof of work works. If you don't know much about proof of work, it's easy to Google proof of work. It's easy to go to YouTube and look up proof of work and learn about how Bitcoin and proof of work blockchains work. However, today we're talking about proof of stake. Now, proof of stake has that same concept. The same way it's very expensive for you to attack the Bitcoin network because of the electricity cost, the cost of the machines, proof of stake's a little bit different, because you actually can run it on what we would see in a normal business place today, like a server. And sometimes you don't even need to have the physical computer, the physical server in your house or in your business. You can get cloud computing, right? I mean, anyone ever use Amazon or Google or any of these cloud services, you can spin up. The equipment is held in these centralized data storage centers, and you can spin up your own server there and actually host a network. And of course, now with the crypto space, we're starting to see decentralized versions of that, like Akash. So the proof of stake also has costs associated with it. However, it doesn't use as much electricity, and it's a little bit more efficient in that sense. And it runs on equipment that's not specialized like you would with proof of work and Bitcoin. So in that sense, it's a little bit cheaper and more efficient to run. So how do you offset the cost it would take to attack the network? You do that with a proof of stake algorithm, where instead of having all this money invested in equipment and electricity costs and all these things that makes Bitcoin and proof of work expensive to attack, you actually just take the money itself, and every single operator that processes your transactions and keeps the network up and running and keeps the network safe, those things cost a lot of money. So say Sandy wanted to run a node on OmniFlix. OmniFlix is going to have a minimum amount of money that Sandy has to have as a validator. So let's say it's $200,000 worth of Flix tokens. The way staking works is Sandy can put her minimum amount, that $200,000, she can spin up her server, and that's going to allow her to compete to earn money for processing transactions on a proof of stake network like OmniFlix. Now, here's where it gets cool. You, as the user of OmniFlix or of Atom or of Tezos, you can actually loan or lend out the power of your tokens to Sandy's node, and that allows her to have a much higher amount of stake on that node. So the same way that Bitcoin has a cost associated with attacking it, proof of stake networks have a cost associated of attacking it as well. And part of that cost is the money that we delegate to the person processing the transactions. So why would you want to do that? Well, for one, Sandy, when she runs her node, is going to earn money from the blockchain every time she processes a block of transactions. In order for her to compete, she needs to have more money than she can probably have herself. So what we can do is we can say, hey, I've got 1,000 Flix tokens here in my wallet. I want to take 700 of them and I want to lock them up and basically delegate them over to Sandy's server. So now, instead of having 200,000 tokens that Sandy started with, she has 200,000 plus the 700 that I locked up and delegated to her. Now, you're not actually sending the Flix tokens from your own wallet to her. All you're doing is you're locking them up on the network and saying, I'm not going to use these, and you're delegating. It's almost like you're leasing Sandy the usage and the security of those tokens. Now, in exchange, when Sandy earns her revenue share from the blockchain for processing transactions, anyone who's delegating a certain amount of tokens to her earns an interest rate. So what they do is they pay you out. So If you have blockchains that you truly, truly believe in, many of you come from Tezos. Many of us come over here in Cosmos. Even Ethereum now has went proof of stake. If you have a long-term interest in the blockchain that you're using for NFTs or DeFi or whichever DEXs you use, you really want to kind of make sure that those networks are safe and secure. One of the easiest ways to do that is you want to make sure it's very expensive for a hacker or a group of people to come and attack. The way we do that is by staking. So yes, you're doing this because you have a financial incentive to earn money for staking on the network. However, you're also contributing to the security of the network. If we truly believe in the power of proof of stake, and if we truly believe that these blockchains are going to hold our NFTs and allow us to, do business with each other and basically have a financial relationship with each other, you want to make sure that there's security there, right? The only way we can know that's secure is you have to lock up a lot of money. Because what that does is if Sandy were to break the rules, if Sandy said, you know what, I don't like OmniFlix anymore, Sislo's really made me mad, I'm going to do something with my node today that's going to mess up the network, and I'm going to hack and steal a bunch of money and blah, 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 blah. If Sandy wanted to do that, she has a very, very big financial risk there, because if she breaks the rules, whether it's on purpose or accidentally, Sandy's going to lose the amount of money that she had staked there. It's not the total amount. They have this thing called slashing. Now, one thing you need to realize is slashing exists on almost every single version of proof of stake or delegated proof of stake. You can read more about it by Googling slashing and proof of stake, or go to YouTube and watch some videos on it. Different blockchains handle slashing in different ways, and different networks even have insurance on slashing. So it's definitely something to look into from the risk aspect of running your own node or staking. But the basic principle here is this. You are taking your money, and instead of spending it or trading it out to Bitcoin or trading it out to dollars or your local currency, you're locking up a portion of it. And in exchange, you earn an interest rate. Now, most of these, when you lock them up, you're not actually sending the money to the other side. What you're doing is you're locking it up on the network. And then there's an unlocking phase. In Cosmos, most of the time we see 21 days, although we have seen some that are as high as 28 days, I believe. We also have seen some that are like 7 days and 14 days. What you have to understand is there's a lockup period. And in order to get your funds back, you have to unlock it or unstake it. Once you start the unstaking process, you're no longer earning that interest rate. So keep that in mind. Most of the time, there's going to be a locking period and unlocking period. You earn interest while you're locked in. And of course, you're earning interest usually in that native token. So if I lock up Flix to OmniFlix on the OmniFlix network, I'm earning the Flix token in exchange for that. If Sandy locks up Atom on the Cosmos network, she's earning Atom in relation to that. The Cosmos is actually growing and innovating in that. Sometimes there's these things where you have different security models where you can earn multiple tokens from other blockchains, even stable coins. So it's a constantly changing ecosystem, and there's a lot to it. But let's go back over the key points really quick. One, anytime you hear the term staking, it doesn't always mean staking to the network. They're staking in DeFi, they're staking in DAOs, they're staking for different protocols and DEXs. What we're talking about specifically right now is staking to the network, meaning you're staking to the blockchain that you're working on. Second, there's usually a lockup period, especially in Cosmos. However, I will say this, if you're on Cardano or if you're on Tezos, some of these do not have lockup periods. Simply by choosing a validator to delegate to while your tokens are sitting in your address without being locked up, as long as you choose a validator, while those tokens are sitting in your address, you're actually earning that interest rate. If you leave them sitting there and you don't select a validator to delegate your tokens to on Tezos or Cardano, you are not earning that interest rate. So if anyone ever has questions about that, it's real easy to look up a video. How do I stake on Tezos? How do I stake on Cardano? And it'll show you how you can do so without locking your tokens up. But over here in Cosmos, realize there is a lockup period. The last point I want to make is all of this is done to help the security of the network. You're effectively being paid for leasing your tokens to a validator, which helps them increase the security of the network and it helps them have the possibility of earning more money. And it also affects the voting power to an extent. So those are the three things I wanted to go over, Sandy. That's the basic points. If anyone ever has a question about staking, we're going to dive into this deeper and deeper. The next time we're going to talk about staking to other things such as DEXs, DAOs, or applications. But today I just wanted to cover staking to the network. So I'm going to be quiet for now and let's take some questions. Sandy, do you have any feedback or questions?
Thank you, Chris. Before I make a comment, I just want to say thanks, Jeremy, for joining us. We're going to come over to you and do the art part of the show in just a couple minutes as we wrap up the DeFi and the crypto. One important point that you probably mentioned, or I don't remember, but in the old days when you did staking, you had a risk of losing those tokens. That changed. So back in the day when I was first in this thing years ago, yeah, there was a risk. So I didn't lock up my tokens. But since then, not everything is safe. I'm not saying every kind of staking is safe. That's not what I'm trying to say. But we did move forward in a way that there are certain places you can lock up your tokens, get these rewards, secure the network, and you're not at risk. You're not going to lose those tokens. I think that's the most important thing anybody going into this is going to want to know. So my dear artist friends, it is all up to you. Not only do you give value to this network by bringing your beautiful artwork, music, poetry, photography, but you also create the traffic, because then collectors come, they buy your work, these transaction fees, it gives the network stability, it gives the network reputation. And then after that, you have people who say, okay, you're getting paid. You're the first people who are getting paid from this network, from those tokens. So if you decide to take a certain percentage of it and lock those tokens up, because you've already spent all this time and energy and put your art, you already believe in this network, this is another way that you can give value to this network and also reap rewards. I mean, some of these new tokens, when they come out, they have like 108% APR. So, you know, it may be a volatile coin, but, you know, over time, this really can add up and be a substantial kind of, little nest egg. Yes, Chris, please go ahead.
Yeah, I didn't want to touch on something because you just said something very important. And you're right. Some of these have very, very high APRs. As far as what you earn. And we're going to dive into that more so that people have a better understanding of the pluses and the minuses, because it's good depending on what market you're in, how new the coin is, the distribution cycle. There's a lot to look at when you're trying to decide whether you lock up your tokens on a network and how long you leave it there. Because you have to remember, the weird thing about interest is it's cool that you're earning an interest rate, but you're also kind of displacing. For all of us out there who hold a certain amount of a token right now, when you have those high interest rates, you're introducing inflation into the ecosystem. So there's trade-offs there, right? So you have to learn how to navigate the space. And we see these big shiny numbers and it can be very exciting. And in some cases, those big numbers can be a good thing. And in some cases, those numbers could be, we won't say a bad thing, but there's definitely risk associated with it. And there's a time and place on learning how to use it. So, for example, you know, I use that for Fight Farm and I take those high rates of rewards and I turn that into stable coins and pay out to my players. That's not necessarily good for the price of the coin because I'm dumping it. And that's one thing about locking your coins up, Sandy, is when you lock them up, there's always downward price pressure from other people who get that reward and dump it. So we're going to dive into that deeper and deeper and deeper. And make it more of a discussion so that as people learn the terminology, as these artists learn about the mechanics of staking, they can really learn too on like, well, you know, should I stake? What's the risk associated with something like a high 108%? Also teach them how to look at those different things that are going on there in the background and figure out like, okay, if I'm going to do this, like, when's the best way to time it and how to use that and get the most out of it without lessening the downside and the risk?
Okay, thank you. And one thing I want to say is, if all of this sounds like word salad, that's all right, because we'll break it down for you. And the main reason I got together with Chris to bring you this information is because for the past couple of years, I've been in the DMs privately with many of my friends who are asking me, okay, Sandy, what does it mean staking? Okay, should I do this? Okay, what validator are you choosing for staking? So these are financial questions that have been placed in my lap. And I just thought, you know what? We need to just bring literacy and education so that you can understand what is a validator, what you can be doing with your tokens, and just bring you the information. Because if I say, and then, you know, people are like, well, who do you choose? I want to do who you're doing. And you know what? That's not a good thing, because like Chris says, if you're going to go and put your tokens on every validator, then that takes away from the decentralization of what we're trying to do. No, I want you to go read about it and you decide where you're going to put that, because there's a lot of great important things. And the more you know, the better it is. So, however, it can be complicated. We just, you know, we want to make it as simple as possible, and we want to give you the choice of what you're doing. All right. With that being said, we're going to go into the second part of our program. Chris, did you want to finish up with any last words about token and DeFi? And by the way, we will translate this into Farsi for our Farsi-speaking friends, our Persian Iranian friends, as well as Spanish. John will, you know, help our Latino and Latina Spanish-speaking people make sense of this as well. So go ahead and finish up, Chris, and then we'll go over to Jeremy and get into the art.
Yeah, and that's all I had for today. So just realize that, you know, we're going to talk more about staking. We're going to spoon feed this to you. Don't get too overwhelmed. If you have questions, feel free to message Sandy. Feel free to message me. Anyone on here can follow me and add me. I'll try to answer it. And we will have some video content rolled out that will, like Sandy said, be translated. And of course, even if we don't create our own video content, one thing that Sandy said she wanted to do in a Discord or a Telegram was to share links of places that explain these things. Remember, a lot of this information is out there. We don't have to go recreate the wheel. If there's a good video out there that explains staking, I don't think that I necessarily have to go create one. I just need to kind of curate and find those resources and feed that to the community. And in some cases, take those things that are already existing and translate them for regions of the world that may not have it in their language. So I hope this helps. Feel free to message me, and always open to discussing these things either in the space or outside of the space.
Thank you, Chris. I appreciate it. And also big thank you to you for engaging the new onboarding artists into your project and showcasing their artwork. It's really amazing. That's a really genius idea. We started doing that and it's turned into a thing now. So everybody do check out the profile that Chris is on. There's a lot of artwork. Some new creators have joined his project. And it's kind of fun too. If you're into AMA, sports and betting, it's a very fun project. And you can also learn about tokens and DeFi by engaging in that as well. With that being said, please everybody, I'd like to welcome our special guest today is Jeremy Torman, a musician, an artist, an inventor, a community leader, and someone who has not only inspired me, but actually helped me learn this technology and the AI art that I create is using the model ETV8. We had Elo on our show previously. You heard about what is ETV8. Well, now this is the other part of that. That how that got made is Jeremy Torman. Thank you so much, Jeremy. Please take the mic, introduce yourself. And we're just a freestyle. We just want to know who you are. How did you get into NFTs? And tell us about your artwork. And by the way, I really love what you have with the car. So that style GAN really steals my heart. So take it away.
Hey, everyone. I'm Jeremy. Let's see. Who am I? Well, I'm 45 years old. So for those of you that are old enough to remember the day of the Jonestown Massacre, that was the day that I was born. Yep. Let's see, how did I get into NFTs? Well, I was posting my art to Reddit in the Deep Dream subreddit, which Deep Dream was one of the probably the earliest AI art tools. And the way that was created was scientists were working on computer vision classifiers, things that could sort of pick out of a picture what it was, and somebody had the brilliant idea to make it enhance what it thinks it sees instead of just classify the objects that it thinks it sees. And Deep Dream was born in about 2015. That's when I first started seeing those images on the internet, and I just instantly knew that it was something that I had to learn and get into. And and one of the reasons why is because my experiences with LSD, hiking, the rocks on the mountainside would be sort of like turning into animals. And Deep Dream reminded me a whole lot of that, kind of like these machine hallucinations. So the next thing that was created was style transfer, where they could they learned how to use the Deep Dream network to sort of extract and separate the style from the content of the image. So the content being the objects in it, and the style being brushstrokes, colors, patterns, things of that nature. And you could apply them to any input photograph or video that you had. And once I got that up and running on my local machine, I started making videos and posting them to the Deep Dream subreddit. And that's when Gavin Shapiro reached out to me and was like, hey, that's really cool. Do you want to collaborate? So, of course, I said, yeah. I didn't really know that Gavin was kind of famous for making Cinema 4D tutorials and dancing spiraling penguins and flamingos. So yeah, we put together, he gave me an animation and I Deep Dreamed over it, or style transferred over it. And it just kind of like sat, I guess, on a shelf for 6 months. And then Gavin reached back out to me and said, would you mind if I mint this as an NFT? There's no guarantee that it will sell, but you might make some money. And I said yes, and he said good. Hopefully the guy who did the music will agree, and he did. And and it got minted on Super Rare, where it sold for quite a bit of money. And I didn't know nothing. I didn't know anything about crypto or any of that. I mean, maybe a little more than the average person, but not enough to, like, I didn't have a wallet, so I just had Gavin give me like a couple ETH cash, which I think ETH was he gave me a third of the money, and I think it amounted to like $2,400. So ETH was like, I think it was $7 or $8. I think he gave me 3 ETH worth of cash. And then it was after that that, like, I decided, and it took a while. It took a while for me to wrap my head around it all, but I decided that I needed to set up a wallet and buy some ETH and start minting my own NFTs. And it took maybe like 2 weeks of just like sitting down and figuring it out and like really working on it. Sometimes I get frustrated and I would give up for the day, but eventually I figured it out. So I guess that's about it about who I am, how I got into NFTs. I've been doing art for my whole life, but once I figured out how to start training models, specifically the first one that I figured out how to train was StyleGAN. I think my art became a whole lot more interesting. Any questions?
Oh, Jeremy, that is incredible. So your entry into NFT was having a super rare. That's like, you know, pretty incredible. I'm not going to say, oh, you're so lucky, because that would be disrespectful. Because what you did was incredible. You understood what was happening, and you went there and you submitted your work. So basically, when you submitted your work, Gavin Shapiro reached out to you. He recognized the quality in which you were doing, and then that did that. Well, since then, you've done quite a bit of other things as well. Mostly the after StyleGAN, fast forward to ETV8. And that's something that kind of blew my mind, because I already learned how to use, I was working with Midjourney, and then I did some of the other stuff. But when ETVA came out, that was just the next level. So what model are we up to now on that? Is it the fourth one? Is that where we are?
I think 8.4. Yeah, 8.4. So the fourth one, or maybe. I think it's the third one. Yeah, I never released 8.1 or 2, but I released 8.3 and 8.4. Refining the model with new techniques that I've learned. I think it might be important to cover more of this trajectory. So eventually that piece of art, it's called The Curse of the Dancing Flamingos, that me and Gavin worked on. It got sold at Sotheby's, and about a year ago, the folks at TED reached out to me to do the opening animation to kick off the TED conference for last year. And sometime around then, that's when I started working on ETV8 with Elo. And the way that we kind of came to that was I sent him a whole bunch of psychedelic StyleGAN outputs that I had generated, and he basically drew over them and sort of crafted them into, you know, I guess in a way the way that Deep Dream enhances what it thinks it sees in an image. Elo did that with a Wacom tablet and Photoshop and a few other tools. So he drew over the top of all those and smoothed stuff out and fixed things, and sent me about, I think it was about 30 images, and then we worked out some captions, did a trial run. Oh yeah, I guess that was an early prototype that we had a few of our friends test out, that we figured out, I think we learned some things with that earlier prototype that never got broadly released. For example, when you're captioning your images, you don't want to use too many intricate words. If it's going to be a model that other people are going to use, it's good to rely on your shared language instead of artists and stuff can sort of develop their own shared language, but it's kind of niche. I guess what I mean by that kind of thing happens a lot. If you talk to somebody who's in real estate, they think that you know all sorts of acronyms like BTE and, you know, and whatnot, but you don't. They do, because it's sort of an insider language to the industry. And I think people often forget this. They forget that, because most of the people that they interact with know these words, they forget that the broader public doesn't. So we had to, we pared that down and refine the model and then pushed it out in, it's probably, I don't know if it's the only one, but it was probably one of the first stable diffusion models to be locked inside of an NFT.
I love it, because one of the things that gave me great satisfaction was, as you're training these models, you asked us to submit the artwork that we created using this model. So that to me was like a huge honor, you know, to be a part of the beta and to the development of that. And so if you go and search the hashtag ETV8, you will see quite a bit of art. And also on 01, I think a lot of us minted a lot of our work. So maybe we couldn't afford to buy Jeremy's super rare pieces, but we had a great time scoring artwork from each other, and those are very valuable. It's still created by us, and so that's one of the magical things I think about this space is, yeah, it's good if you can go to Super Rare and buy that, but you know, if you're active and you're in this space, you can also be able to collect artwork from people on different platforms. So Jeremy, tell us also a little bit about your music. I played some of your music earlier at the beginning of the space. You're a banjo player. What other instruments do you play?
Oh, yeah, all right. Drums, like a drum set, hand drums, the guitar, bass, the didgeridoo. Yeah, those are like the physical musical instruments that I probably play well. I've played around with a whole bunch, too many to really name, a whole bunch of other musical instruments, but didn't really spend enough time with them to learn their nuances. And then I sort of play like... So there's this program for making music called FL Studio, and that's the one, formerly it was called Fruity Loops. That's the one that like I learned. And the reason why was because they had like a free demo, and I think they still do. You can install it. It'll run on most computers, including Macs now. Yeah, it's a free demo. The limitation being that you can export your waves or MP3s, but you can't save your project file. So you can't, unless, you know, you leave it up on your computer, you can't sort of work on the same song for months, or days, or yeah, basically you can't save the project file, but once you buy it, you can. And I don't know why, but like out of the other programs I've tried, I always kept going back to that one, and I play that like an instrument. I think it's probably the piano roll, like how it organizes the notes on a timeline. I think it's just, for me personally, it's very intuitive and it makes sense how to punch in your notes or play. I mean, you can also play them on a keyboard and alter like the note length and the velocity of them. And it has a whole bunch of like audio plugins, delays, reverbs, filters, some very complicated filters, distortions, the whole bit. So there's a lot of great things built into it. And I play it kind of like a musical instrument in a way, but like you can control a whole ensemble, like drums, hand drums, string instruments, the woodwinds, horns. You can just put it all in there. I recorded a few things there. I started putting that out online probably in about 2008. So I guess I've been at it for a while. But yeah.
Thank you, Jeremy, for sharing with us all these. It's just, you're so casual about it, but you know, you're like, yeah, I did the opening animation, you know, for the TED conference. I mean, these are all very huge things that you've achieved, and I just love that you're very humble, approachable, and you genuinely want people to learn this technology so they can express their art, whether it's music or animation. And so I'm really personally grateful because you've helped me along on this journey. And I know by what you're doing, you've elevated the level of the space into, you know, fine art, wonderful. And I love your jokes. By the way, Jeremy does join the AI Art Chill Spaces Tuesdays and Thursdays. I look forward to when you join and you share with us the technical knowledge you have, as well as the jokes and the camaraderie, because it is a safe space. And I'm bringing up Make It Rad because we're going to open up the floor to questions and comments. And then we're going to get into our little shill time where people can talk about their art and what they're doing. And Crypto Canvas Chronicles collects on many blockchains. So I want to welcome Make It Rad to the stage. How are you?
Good. How's it going, Sandy?
Nice to see you, Make It Rad. It's so good to have you up here. You got any comments or questions or something update you want to share with us?
I will not update anything, but I will just kind of say that Jeremy's being fairly modest here. That's why he came up. There's a lot of projects that he hasn't talked about, which he probably should. You know, I didn't hear him talk about Mythologicals, but that was a really great project, you know, at a time period where AI was not really accepted yet. It really exploded. I mean, he did amazing sales on that. And on top of that, he was able to gather, you know, a few core people to work on it, but then also open it up to the community and really kind of, you know, built that community up around it. And some of those people are still around, of course, some of them are not. But, you know, that was a definite project that I think you should probably speak a little bit about, Jeremy.
Yeah. And I will. It was, that was a great project. That was, that came out of when Rivers Have Wings and AdNoun or Adverb decided shortly after OpenAI released Clip, they decided to start hooking it up to basically various image generation architectures. And I think the first one they hooked it up to was StyleGAN, one of the first ones that didn't work terribly well. But when they hooked it up to VQGAN, that enabled people to start really typing in words and generating images. So that was all made with VQGAN plus Clip. And yeah, it was an amazing project because we could first start to, using VQGAN plus Clip, you could really make anything. It did have some limitations. It would put stuff that should be on the ground in the sky, and sometimes it would put the sun on a beach, like in the sand, instead of like along the horizon when you typed in sunset. So it didn't seem to fully understand physics, but over the course of like a few months, and as I was moving back to my home state of Utah from Tennessee, I started to like sort of bounce around in my head like how I could create a collection with this. And I talked to a few different people. I came up essentially with a formula through trial and error of something that works really well, and that would be that was to make a list of fantasy realms that creatures could be from, a list of various mythological creatures, a list of materials that those creatures could be made out of, and a list of things that could power them. And once I had settled on that as a good formula, I think at some point Make It Rad actually reached out to me and asked for some help figuring out StyleGAN. And You know, you get a lot of, you actually get a, like when you do style gain, you get a lot of people that are like, oh, that's cool. How do you do it? And once they figure out that it's an immense amount of work, that requires like 1500 images, minimum to just to start training it. Most people give up, and Make It Rad really was like, hell yeah, let's do this. So he stuck with it. And, I checked out the art on his page and was like, yeah, this guy's actually pretty good. Pretty good artist. And, yeah, shortly after he figured it out, I asked him if he wanted to co-found Mythologicals with me. And I sent him the notebook. That's when we started making characters. And in those days, I think what it took like 10 minutes, 15 minutes to make each image before you even knew if it was good.
Yeah, I think that's about right. And I think I started with a notebook that was different than yours too, Jeremy. And I remember you looking at them and going, these don't feel quite right. And so I had already made like 100 at 10 minutes a piece. And I had to switch my notebook. I remember being in tears.
Yeah. For whatever reason, the workflow of a notebook has like a big impact on the images generated, and it still does. Even with the diffusion models that people are using, the model's important, but also I think how Clip connects to those models or which versions, it all, yeah, there's schedulers and there's various other settings. A lot of people use the web UI automatic 1111, but the sampling method, I think we only had one sampling method and it was a fixed scheduler, and you could change the steps or the size. But we didn't have a ton of settings, at least that we understood at the time. And different notebooks would make, you know, you type in the same thing and enter in the same seed, and different notebooks would output, even though they were using the same models, just the way that they connected them had a big impact on how it would look. So yeah, that was part of it too, is that how many artists did we pick up? Like 17?
Yeah, I think that's about right. And, you know, some of them came and went. And so, you know, we got to meet a lot of new people. And, you know, I just remember when Rudolph joined the team, I remember seeing his first generations, and, you know, they were completely different than what you and I were doing, but they were absolutely gorgeous. And it was like, oh God, this is going to be great. And it really did kind of open things up a little bit as we started bringing in new people. And, you know, getting kind of different takes on the same thing. And it was really cool seeing the way that, you know, because a lot of people were at that time were like, oh, AI are, you know, everything's going to look the same, blah, blah, blah. But I think that proved it to me, you know, over the course of us all building 1,000 of these, that was not the case. We all had very strong opinions in what we were doing. And you know, just by changing little things in the prompt and wanting to be different, the work truly was. It didn't look the same.
Yeah. That was a interesting thing about it. So instead of making 1,000 pieces and dropping a whole collection at once, we actually dropped them Saturday morning, 100 at a time. So as we brought in new artists, like we would have calls and communications throughout the week, and sort of inspire everybody would get inspired. People would think up mythological creatures that, you know, the rest of us hadn't. So we'd incorporate some of that, or realms that we hadn't, or things that these things could be powered by. That was a fascinating experience, those 10 weeks.
Wow. And you left that out. I'm so glad you came up here with Make It Rad. That is a very important project. And yes, Jeremy is very humble, and there's so many other things. And actually, I'm humble too. we're all humble up here because, you know, if you look up in the nest, I just posted a project we did called Fantastical Creatures. And that was during, you know, this bear winter. And we just decided to get together and just create, you know, with this AI art that we were having so much with, just some kind of fantastical creatures. And we just had the best time in our DMs, joking and laughing, sharing the ones we didn't mint. And then at the end of it, we minted it and ended up just kind of sharing it between us. Nobody was really buying anything at that time. The timing wasn't good, but it was actually one of my favorite projects that I worked with. And you were part of that project, Make It Rad, Lucid Dreamer, Illustrata, Chris Hackett, you know, everybody, the Seattle Driver. So Jeremy, is there anything else you've left out that we should, you know, we'll have more spaces. There's just so much to cover, but anything else you want to add and tell us that we should know with all these amazing collaborations and inventions too?
Let me think. I mean, there's just so much that happens so much that happens in the world that it's kind of easy to forget. Forget about things, but yeah, we did. I guess I participated in a few different collections with Make It Rad now. There was a collaboration with Elo, where we minted the training data that we had created for the ETV8 at a very affordable price, and once all of those were released, we released the model to the people that had collected them all, and also put that model up for sale. I mean, I have a few collaborations in the works that. Yeah, like the very long arc of art for me is like some things just take a long time, like months or even sometimes a year of work to like get it just right before I'm ready to release it. So a lot of people think AI art is super easy, and it can be. You can definitely take that approach of just typing in a few words and making a piece of art, but I prefer to like develop a workflow and run stuff through several different computers, draw on top of it with my drawing tablet or my iPad if I need to, Photoshop stuff, run it through After Effects, crop things, bounce it over to Deep Dream or Style Transfer sometimes, put it through StyleGAN, run it through Stable Diffusion or SDXL, run it through Custom Models with LoRAs, take it over to the Mac, sort the images out. I think I really appreciate like developing like a complex workflow, especially when other people are involved too, because you know it goes through their brain and they add to it bits of things that they've learned throughout their life experiences. So yeah,
thank you, Jeremy. Also, shout out to Terra Spaces. If it wasn't for Terra Spaces, I would not be able to maintain the archives of these spaces. I've been recording, interviewing, and bringing you the crypto and the NFT news. And it's Terra Spaces who manages this huge collection of spaces that are recorded and they're available to you. And he does take donations, so in all crypto. So I really appreciate that Terra Spaces helps us because we can go back and listen to these spaces because we're not going to be here forever. And just by what we heard today from Jeremy, it was in his own words. He described to us how he got into NFTs and how this came about to be. And there's just so much more to cover still. There's, as you said, you know, you're so busy. There's so many spinning plates. And there's probably things, you know, that are secret. Artists have secret projects that I'm a little superstitious. Sometimes I work on things and I don't tell anybody. I don't want to jinx stuff. So, you know, sometimes we don't share everything right away. And that's all right. But please, we like it that you came here. And does anybody have any questions for Jeremy? Because then we'd like to go to Shilling and make it rad. I want to know what you're working on because you're a pretty amazing artist. And I actually want to schedule you if you have time and to interview you as well for one of our spaces, if you can do that. Not to put you on the spot, but you're definitely on my list.
I'd be happy to jump in, Sandy. Just you know, shoot me up a DM. We'll work out some time to do it. In terms of Shilling, I can tell you about a project I'm working on currently. It's through a platform called Koji. We launched a day or two ago. It's kind of a new novel idea in terms of working with AI and creating NFTs. Instead of actually buying an NFT like you normally would, here you go to a platform and you're interacting with a model. So, you know, I trained a model and two other artists trained models. And you go into the interface. Each one of us has our own UI that was built around the model so that you can interact with it and actually create, you know, your own piece. You know, I haven't seen anybody do anything quite like this before. Usually what happens is, you know, you hit the mint button and it just generates something new for you. But this actually brings the user into the world, which is really great, you know, because they get to create what they want. And I gave options for mine because I've always had collectors ask me, oh, do you have one that's in the day or in the night? I do a lot of architecture studies. And I'm like, no, I don't have that. But, you know, then I do it the next time. Or my frame is 16x9, or my frame is 9x16, or my frame's square. So I was able to kind of implement those options into it. And so it's really personalized to each collector. You know, some collectors like my desert pieces, others like the ones that are in the jungle. So again, you know, they get to choose. And I think it's a really great platform. I really like the way it's set up and, you know, I invite everybody to come and play. You can go to it now. It's at koji.ai. That's koji.ai. And, you know, generations are free this week. So you can generate till your heart's content and just make cool stuff. No obligation to mint. If you decide to mint, they have a bridge set up for you. It is on the AVAX platform. And, you know, they cost like $60 a piece. So it's not going to break the bank. And, you know, you have something kind of cool and new. And this is the first drop through the platform. And I can go ahead and, oh, you already did it for me. So, yeah, that link that you put up there, Sandy, appreciate that. We are doing a space today in another 45 minutes. So you can come learn more about the project if you will. Would love to have you there.
Oh, thank you, Maker Rad. See, this is the kind of thing Chronicles wants to bring for you. So this is new, this is important, and it's not going to cost you at the moment to go check out this way. And so, yeah, definitely, I'm going to join your space, and I hope everybody else will check it out as well. Thank you, Make It Rad. I look forward to checking out this new platform. And by the way, I couldn't afford your other art necessarily, but I scored your art on 01, which is the AVAX blockchain. And I'm glad that you've developed this, and you're now you're taking it to this part. So yeah,
I'll just say one more thing. This is actually by the creators of 01. Koji is. That's how I met them. And that's how, you know, they reached out to me because, you know, my work was fairly popular on 01. And I like 01 too, Sandy, because it's free. I'm giving it back to other artists that are, you know, just kind of fans and whatnot. So it's a lot of fun to kind of create there. And then, you know, since it is for free, I just kind of do what I want there. And that's kind of a beautiful thing, right? You're exploring new things that you wouldn't do. The work's maybe a little bit darker. I don't normally put out that kind of stuff. So yeah, it's a lot of fun, man. I love it. But I will shut up and let somebody else talk now. Have a good one.
Oh, Make It Rad. No, you don't have to shut up. This is so, and by the way, this is how it is. I mean, this is what I love to hear. You put art on 01. Everybody loved it, collected it. We made you famous. And they're like, oh, everybody loves him. let's bring it to the next level. So a lot of artists take risks and they go to platforms. They may not necessarily make money right away. That took a lot of time and energy for you to be on 01 and to mint your work on there. You also had secondary sales, I believe. I think you're one of the few artists that I know that did have secondary sales. And, yeah, that's great. So this is what makes your day. If you're an artist and a platform reaches out to you, they say, we want you to help us build this or be part of the beta testing. So congratulations that you're at that level. Make it rad. You've earned it. It's a beautiful artwork. You've been in this space for a long time, even during the bear. And you've got a huge following of collectors. And I also appreciate the advice and guidance you give in the AI art chill spaces. You do show up, you tell us what you're doing, and then you also share with the experiments, and this is part of the growth. Thank you very much. With that being said, Jeremy, I don't want to keep you if you have to go, but I love it that you're sticking around. We're just going to have a couple more people share with us. They came up on the stage. One is Lee, a musician and NFT artist, and then BB. And then we're going to wrap it up for today, folks. I took pictures of the people who came here, of the wonderful artist. I am definitely going to go back and collect art for the Crypto Chronicles vaults on different blockchains. So I appreciate you that you came and you participated in the space. Lee, please welcome. Go ahead and unmute yourself and share with us your latest music and creativity. How are you?
Hey there, Sandy. I'm good, thanks. I hope everybody's doing good in the room. This is a very cool space, the Chronicles, and I think I was only here once before. It was a long time ago, and it's good to be back again today. My name is Lee, and I'm an artist. I'm a music producer, and I mint my music on Web3. I mostly minted, I guess, on Object so far. I do these open editions on Tez. And the reason why I do open edition is because I feel like it's like less pressure for me, you know. I don't have to wait to sell anything out. It's just kind of like here for a moment, and it's kind of like done when it's done, so I can move on to the next sort of version of it. I make my music all myself. I write it on a guitar. You know, I just kind of like I open up to the universe and just let something come through, and I build it in Logic. And it's a lot of fun, you know. I had to not only learn how to become, I guess, play an instrument, also learn how to sing to a degree, but also have to learn to become like a producer and a mixer. And it's been quite a journey, you know. And it's not easy. It's not easy doing all those things. So a lot of the time, it's like a labor of love, you know. But right now, I've got an open edition, actually two of them right now, an Object. I put a song out about like a year and a half ago in these spaces on Web3 called Still Believe in Love. And that's a song about hope and about the power of love. And I think, like, you know, my child self is very much alive in that song, and I'm very proud of it. I got like 3 days left on that open edition. The cover art that I do to my open edition music NFTs, or all my music NFTs, are AI generated. I use the power of AI to sort of complete the package, you know. I believe in the power of AI as a tool to amplify my own creative energies, you know. It's important for me to put my hands into my work in a lot of ways, in the old-fashioned ways. But I also embrace AI because, you know, it is the future, and it's a lot of fun. It's a lot of fun. It can get things done a lot faster, you know. And if you look to the cover art of the song up there, Still Believe in Love, you just see people dancing on the cover, you know. And there's a theme of like time in these editions that I'm putting out. This one's called Alive in 85. You know, I'm obsessed with my life, the passing of years, you know, a lot of the time. I'm a nostalgic person a lot of the time. And I remember, you know, my childhood, the 80s, you know, it's a great time. And that cover artist is there to sort of celebrate that. And also that song is sort of a fusion of all the years that I've been listening to music, all these decades and stuff, you know. But I've also got another song that I released just last week on Tez. And it's a new song. It's the last one that I produced. It's called Rogue. And it's a very different kind of song than Still Believe in Love. Rogue is a song about feeling like an outsider or feeling like the world perhaps is on a weird track. I've certainly felt that way in my life, you know, especially the past few years. And it's good to sort of have it complete. It's a very heavy kind of song. It's very riff driven. And if you look to the cover art there, you'll see like this eagle, you know. It's the Eagle Eye edition. I give my editions like these subtitles just to help make them unique. And it symbolizes, you know, strength and, you know, trying to see the truth of things in the world, you know, trying to see past a lot of the confusion and see the truth of things. And I'd love to play for you guys if that's cool. I think I'm all set.
Please, go ahead.
Great. So I don't want to over-explain my stuff, you know. Sometimes it's kind of like a weird balance of like talking about your art but over-explaining it. But here it is. Check it out.
We'll be right back.
Thank you, Sandy. Thank you, Chronicles.
Thank you, Lee. That was amazing to have two musicians here today. Everybody, check out Lee's open edition. Chronicles is definitely going to collect that for our vault. I appreciate you. And it's almost 9:30, so we're going to wrap up the show. I'm sorry if you didn't get a chance to come up to present. I've taken pictures of your profile. Please post your little art in the bubble down there if you didn't get a chance to present. Shout out to Oculus. That picture up in the nest, I took that picture. She is one of the most amazing photographers that I've been wanting to meet, and I got a chance to meet her. I want to thank Jeremy for coming to the show. I want to double thank Make It Rad. I'll see you in half an hour, Make It Rad, in your space. And thank you, John, our newest team member as part of the Chronicles. And Chris, I know you want to say a couple words. We're going to finish it off. And then I'm going to play one of Jeremy's banjo songs from the from his stream. So do check out Jeremy's profile. Go to the website. He's got music. He's got artwork. And check out Make It Rad. Chris, over to you, my friend.
Yeah, thank you for coming, everyone, today. Thank you to our guests. Thank you for alone the crowd. Big shout out to Shaq down in the crowd. For those who want to support her, check out our Fight Farm, the current one listed. Sandy had it posted in the nest. We are featuring her art, so show her some love. Go check out those NFTs, and not only will you get my NFT, you will get the airdrop version from Shaq. Thank you for all those that tuned in to hear about staking. Like I said, if you have questions about that, feel free to DM me. We will talk more and more about DeFi. And don't forget, the DAOs are about to go live soon on OmniFlix, and that's going to change the game for how we present and do things here at Crypto Canvas Chronicles. See you next time.
Thank you, Chris. Shaoyer, I have collected your artwork for the Chronicles Vault just now for the OmniFlix blockchain. Thank you very much. Jeremy, I really appreciate you being here. Any last thoughts or word you want to leave us with? I'm going to play a Beach Walker. Are you there, Jeremy? That's okay. There you are. You're here. Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks so much for having me. And yeah, thanks for being willing to learn. I get really excited when I meet people that want to learn how to do what I know how to do. Yeah, thanks. Thanks for being willing and happy to learn. All right. Have a good day. Enjoy this song.
Thank you, Jeremy. Sharing your knowledge is important. You know, a lot of people hide knowledge and don't share it because they want to be special. So that in itself is a gift that you're generous, that you're sharing all this. This is a music made by Jeremy Torman called Beach Walker. Thank you for joining us today, friends. It's been wonderful. I love collecting your art, and tune in in a couple of weeks for our next Chronicles, where we talk about financial stuff so you can learn it of what's going on and share with you beautiful art, beautiful music, and to encourage positive growth in this space. Thank you very much, friends.
There's this principle in like Taoism. There's this principle in like Taoism where it's like the more you fight something, the more like the opposite of what you want, like just inevitably kind of starts to happen. There's this principle in like Taoism where it's like the more you fight something, the more like the opposite of what you want, inevitably it kind of starts to happen.
Chirping on the bird app, listening to nerds flap, wondering why the fuck my timeline's so cursed. It's like everybody's holding heavy bags in Web 3. That's why they can't fly, they just drowning in the bird bath, fishing for some dry powder. Watch how we ignite the tower, blowing up their bank accounts for getting out of fight the power. Y'all don't even realize how deep this shit goes. They preach an open source, but don't listen to the code. And now it's mutiny, community, uprise. There's no more humility, futility, plus size. Motherfuckers leaking from the wrench down to the bare metal. Which side of the line you bleeding out on when the dust settles? Motherfucking west side shit, needle and noose. Sticking with my armory, Yambato and Bruce. Repping psychedelic artistry, believing the truth. Like these motherfuckers even need a reason to sue? GM fam.
Is it really worth all the fighting? Is it really worth all the drama? And the answer, I think, is a clear no.
We started using Zoom, now we finna zoom out, teaching all these plebiscites what this game's really all about. Little baby bitches when they choose to have fits, all you're left with is kibble when you lose all them bits. And that kibble's just sawdust, the shit is all rust. Not a great look, you're what we'd call all nuts. And I for one did not see that coming. Cracking open books, yo, that's a lot of money. Meanwhile over here rewiring features, more critical thinking, less knee jerk, more evolution, less shit coin preachers pretending to be teachers. Y'all just predatory leeches. I mean, please, just look at the track record. A bunch of VC rap fucks sucking up the cheddar. The recipe is two steps, rinse and repeat. Now we all in your butts and we bring in receipts. GM fam, have a seat.
If you're listening to this, my plea to you, you would be like, don't have to take a side on it. Just say like, is it really worth this war of attrition? It might cost us a lot more than what can be gained by like fighting this to the bitter end. And sometimes it's better just like move on.
Terror spaces.